today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Where were you born?
I was born in Newark, New Jersey in 1924. I'm 85 years old. And it's Newark, the city. My father bought this two-family house about a half a block from the school because he wanted his kids to be able to walk to school. And it was inner city, and I walked to school, and I had two brothers and a sister, and we all went to that one grammar school there.
Where was your wife born, and what's her name?
Harriet was born in Irvington, New Jersey, which is just the next town adjacent to Newark. Actually, it's, where is it? I guess northwest of Newark, but adjacent, a smaller town, but a real town. And in fact, I met my wife while on leave, while I was a Marine. Took her out on a date, and I remember taking her to her last Thanksgiving Day football game when she was a senior in high school. And I came back and married her.
What made you want to be a Marine?
Well, I was working in Florida at the time, and I knew I had to make a decision. If I didn't, someone else was going to make it for me. And I figured if I was going to go into service, I wanted to go to one that would be the most attractive and the most meaningful to me. And the Marines struck me as that would give me the type of exposure that I wanted in the war. Because in those days, you know, the war was, everybody wanted to do what they could. And we were really there protecting our country. And it was no big or unusual deal to want to do your part. And I figured that's the place I could do the most.
All right. Where were you on Pearl Harbor?
At Pearl Harbor, I was, as I suggested, I was actually in Tampa, Florida, and I was taking a course in surveying, which is very significant in terms of what happened to me in service. I was actually sitting, I was living in a rooming house, and I ate in a boarding house, and this boarding house had maybe 20 guys on a long table that would eat. When Pearl Harbor came, you know, everybody, these guys were all working men who worked around Tampa. And the next morning, that crowd was reduced to maybe one quarter. Three quarters of those men signed up, and I was at the table, and I was very impressed. But that's where I was when Pearl Harbor occurred.
What was the first day of training like?
Well, it is not only the first day, but the whole experience. I was sworn into the Marine Corps in Orlando, Florida, and I was shipped up to Camp Lejeune. And not Camp Lejeune. I was went where? Boot camp was one of these very, very transforming experiences in the sense that you went in and you soon learned when they cut your hair and gave you a shower and threw some clothes at you. That you were going to be disciplined and there was going to be a big transformation in your life. And it was a little scary in the sense that everything changed when you went into boot camp. Parris Island is where I took boot camp. And you soon learned that there was only one way for you to do things, and that was the Marine Corps way. And it was very rigid. And you learned how to take your rifle apart. You learned how to march. You learned how to be disciplined in every way. And you were kind of beaten down to the point where you knew that you were nothing but a Marine, and you better shape up and do it the way you're being taught. And that's what they did. They taught you how to take care of yourself, how to be disciplined, and little by little, the art of being a Marine, which was marching and answering and physical exercise and endurance. And I always remember the rifle range at boot camp. It was so hot there that you couldn't, when you came off the range to have lunch, you had to have a salt tablet before you ate. They saw that you swallowed it before you got in there because you had been perspiring so much. And it was a rough, rough time. And after boot camp, at the last week you spend it doing KP, you take care of the dining room for a week. And then just before that, they give you a test to just see where they're going to put you. And that's why I said it was very significant that I had this surveying experience before I joined. And consequently, I got into the surveying school at Camp Lejeune. That was the graduation, the last day of boot camp. And so that's where I went from there to Camp Lejeune to school for surveying.
When was the first day that they said they're going to send you to war?
Send me to?
Like to fight.
To fight. Yes. Well, you know, you have to understand that there's training. I took a course in surveying, and that included all the technical parts of surveying as well as how it applied to triangulation for the artillery and that sort of thing. And out of that course, they awarded one sergeant stripe, two corporals, I think, and about four PFCs. And I was not the smartest, but I was the luckiest. But because of my previous training, I actually became a sergeant out of that course. Well, you soon found that being a sergeant in the Marine Corps meant that you had to handle and train. And from there, I took they made me a drill instructor for in the engineering battalion, where we would get about 30 new people every, I guess, around 6 weeks, and we would keep them in organized shape, but we marched them around to all the specialties, the demolition, the heavy equipment, all those areas of the Marine Corps engineers had, and that's what I did. I did that for quite a while, and after I got through with that, they sent me, I think I was there about 6 months to a year, and I was transferred then to the 4th Marine Division in Maui, and they were then getting ready for an operation, and I had a platoon of men. You soon transformed yourself from a specialist to an infantry person, and I had a platoon of men that I trained, and they became a reserve platoon. And from then, we shipped out, and I knew then that we were going on an operation, and that operation was Iwo Jima. And it was quite a part of my life that I will never forget. It was a short and And other than that short period, it was like not fun and games, but I was very, very acclimated, and I enjoyed my job and what I did. But that's when the time came when I knew that I was going to harm's way.
What was the job of an engineer?
What was my job?
No, what was the job of the engineer?
Of the engineering battalion?
Were you an engineer?
Oh, no, I was not an engineer, but I was a specialist in surveying. I was not a graduate engineer. I had taken this course at Tampa U in surveying and consequently took the Marine Corps training in surveying and became a specialist. And what we did basically is, and there was only two really, other than training, application. One on EWO was regimental headquarters, the artillery. We would set up a baseline and triangulate and accurate targets and locate and correct the maps that were used in the field for the artillery. And then when I got to China, which I'll tell you about, I actually was transferred into Seabees, where I helped do surveying on an airfield, putting down for, they were going to enlarge the runways.
What did you feel about Eugene? Like, what did it look like? Were you amazed?
Well, you know, I can tell you the first time I got aboard and I came up on deck, I passed by video screens for the first time, never saw video screens where they, you saw them that morning that we arrived. The island was in the picture, and you got on deck and you saw an armada of ships for the horizon that went completely 180 degrees around with battleships and destroyers and fighting ships that were just laying in these huge battery of large guns, and you could never imagine anything living after you saw that what was being laid in on that little island. And there was, as far as you could see, there were transports, battleships, cruisers, just a ring around 180 degrees that were just there completely pulverizing this island. And this island, of course, is a volcanic island. That's Suribachi was the island, the volcano in the corner of the island. And so when you did get ashore, the whole beach was nothing but black volcanic ash, basically, and you sunk into your ankles, actually. And that was the most scary part of my life, is that just that short period. When I came in on D1, the second day, with a reserve battalion, and we didn't dig in because there were holes, mortar holes, the Japanese had just laid into this thing that you ended up as a foxhole. See, they really didn't, with all of that firepower, they were entrenched in the mountain and in the highlands and all registered onto the beach. And we really didn't do any damage with all of this. You went in and then you had to get to them, and the hard part was is they were sitting there with all the registration necessary to bring those mortars and firepower into the beach, and that's where the guys who went in, especially D-Day, that's where they got slaughtered and everything. It was a horror, the way that you had to go forward. And then again, as I told you, the thing that saved my life was this specialty training that I had, because that morning at sunrise, there was a lieutenant with a board with all our names on it, assigning these Marines to reinforce different units. And when he got back down to me, he said, "There's a hole for your rating up regimental headquarters." And they sent me up to regimental headquarters. And from there on, it was very easy for me. So the only, and that was luck, really luck, or I would have not been here to talk to you now, I don't think. But that first night in that foxhole, a recon pulled up behind me, which is a little truck with rockets, and he pulled up as close as you are to me and let a salvo go up, and it was, and of course there was nothing but a brilliant light of flash when that took off, and then they just rode away, and I thought that was the end. They saw where that came, and I was going to, but I was spared. They did not do that, so that was the scariest moment, because I knew that I was going to get it then, but I didn't. And we were only in Monley Island for about a month. It's the impressions that you get in war, when you are actually under these conditions, is not only it's hell and it's horrible, but your life comes before you. You examine, for me anyway, I re-examined my life. I saw my life previous to that. And I remember sitting and looking at this cemetery the last day I was there up from the hill, where these guys, where they had taken bulldozers and laid out the cemetery and laid out bodies and covered them, registered all of them, of course. They were surveyed in. And that was quite a sight for me to see the number of bodies that were there. And so it was a month of hell. One day, very bad. The other day, just learn to eat K rations and C rations and not be very clean or feel you're just there for doing your job. But I was one of the lucky guys.
How do you feel? What was your next assignment after Iwo Jima?
Well, I came back from Iwo. I have to tell you, the most uplifting emotion that I got from the island aboard ship to come back was the smell of fresh baked bread and fresh food aboard ship, and to be able to take a shower and get cleaned up. That was quite a thing. And from there I went back to Maui. They gave us a week of R&R in Oahu, which was terrific, and then they disbanded. The war had, Hiroshima had happened, the war, the 4th Marine Division was sent home, but I didn't have enough points. I had just been in this one operation, so I was sent from there to Guam to a depot where they had reserves, and the 4th Region went home. I went there and I got assigned to China, and I went to Tsingtao, China, aboard ship. And that was an interesting thing. As we approached Tsingtao, the bay, it's on the shore north, we were coming into the harbor, and I see all these little boats approaching us, and I says, "Isn't this marvelous? These people were all coming to welcome us." And as we pulled closer, there was all these little people following the ship to pick up garbage. They were in bad, bad shape. But I spent the winter in Tsingtao, China. It was a fantastic experience for me because it wasn't any war, other than I worked on with the CBs to survey this airfield that was being enlarged. And I had a marvelous time. One little Chinese boy who kind of befriended our little survey group. We used to take him into the mess hall and send him home with food, and he would meet us every morning at the gate. And that was kind of a neat little side trick. And then you know, when you're in service, I know for me, I used to go to, and being Jewish, I used to go to services, not as much out of a religious conviction, as much as it was that it was the only place you could hear language without curse words in them. I mean, there were people that would talk with civility. And because of that, there was a Russian group of Jews who had migrated back down from Harbin in Russia into Tsingtao, China. And so I became part of that. I used to go to services on Friday and meet these people, and they wanted to build themselves a little sanctuary, a little temple of their own. And they had a storefront, and I had the connections with the CBs, and I volunteered to head up that project for them because we had the resources. And so I had the guys, none of them who were Jewish, build an ark back at the shop, and I built the platform in this store. And they used to come and see me because they never saw a young man using a hammer and saw to the ability that we did with our equipment. And it was great experience there in China. I just it was cold, very cold. And one of the things I also remember there is coming out of the mess hall in China, in Tsingtao. And as you moved out of the mess hall, there were always these 55-gallon big drums, soap, rinse, to take your mess gear and wash it on the way out. And it was just fenced, and you walked. And on each side of this fence were these Chinese people hoping that you would throw them something or give them something before you washed your gear. That's how bad it was for them, food-wise. But for us, it was a tremendous experience. I remember going to town with guys, and we'd all put in a few dollars, and we'd go and have a banquet someplace. It was a great experience for the time I was there.
Where were you when FDR died?
Where was I when FDR died? Now that was, I was married by then. FDR died. I can't give you that date. And I can only remember seeing all the coverage of the thing, but I can't really bring that back up. I really can't. It's funny, but I can't do that.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about the Japanese today?
Well, you know, my wife and I had this marvelous experience. I worked for a company who distributed and utilized Chrysler Air Temp equipment. And they used to have these promotional programs for selling their equipment. And one of their promotional programs was a trip to Japan. And Harry and I went and spent 2 weeks there, a week in out of Tokyo in a week on our own. And I was concerned about how I would feel about that, knowing all the people and friends I lost and all the experience of the war. But I'll tell you, I came away from there admiring them. Everything about their culture, everything about their everyday life, their cleanliness, their society as a whole, their young people, their schooling, of course the great antiquity and great things to see there. I have a high regard for the Japanese. I was very surprised. I had none of those emotions that I thought I would have when I visited Japan. To this day, I'm a great lover of sushi and sashimi.
How do you feel about the atomic bomb being dropped on Japan?
Well, you know, the first thing, of course, is that you were very, very pleased because it was an end. It was a definitive stopping of more war. But the underlying emotion of war, atomic bomb, is one that I think your generation and generations to come should feel very serious about, whatever you can do to prevent anything like that happening again. You know, it's an old cliche, war is hell, but the truth of the matter, it's more than that. It's to me, it is anyway. It's something that at all costs we should be working to prevent it. And when you're in there, you have to win it, but to be able to prevent it, I think, is the lesson that the atomic bomb stands for me, is something to prevent it. The actual using of it, I guess, was one that maybe saved a lot of lives. We didn't have to go in and try to take a place that would have been prepared to really take many, many, many lives.
What did you do after the war?
Well, again, I came home and married that young lady that I met when I was in boot camp, actually, or right after boot camp. I went to school under the GI Bill, and we were married. We had our first child after 2 years of schooling, and I left school and I got a job with a company that was a distributor and a retailer of heating and air conditioning. And I got the job off the bulletin board at New York College of Engineering, and I went in and I became a sales engineer and called on architects and that sort of thing. Again, I went this direction because of, again, that experience I had in the Marine Corps and in surveying. And so I became a salesperson for this heating and cooling company. And it was the only job I ever had. I became a sales manager. I became a vice president in charge of operations. And I spent my entire career with this one company, which is strange because most people have 3 or 4 years different experiences. But I had a marvelous experience with this company. Raised 3 boys, sent them all to school, and it provided a great opportunity for me. But that's what I did. I actually ended up as senior vice president of a small conglomerate of about 50 people in the heating and air conditioning business.
What do you think about how the movies and video games today glamorize World War II?
Well, you're saying glamorized. There are times I watch some of these documentaries that I find them interesting. I've watched a lot of them. The whole phony part of romance in war is entertainment. It doesn't bother me. I just don't get hooked up on it. People, you know, romance is something that people love to watch. So if you see a romantic movie with relationship to that, I would think that it's entertainment.
No, I'm going in to do some work.
Want
to
hold that a second?
To meet you.
All right. Do you still see your friends today from World War II? Like your army buddies?
No, truthfully, and I guess it's because of my own personality, I have never joined any of the veteran organizations, and I've never fought the war over and over again. I have a very interesting relationship with my family and my friends, and I never moved out of that to recreate or to hang on to that experience. It's maybe one that I wanted to not to to relive in any way. The closest I got to that, I guess I was a cub master and a scout master and brought a lot of my discipline and world experience to transfer some of those things to young people. I really think that and those are the people that I reconnected with. I have great faith and hope and confidence that these generations, given the right information, are going to do the right thing, and hopefully we're going to become better and better as a society. It's a hard job because there are a lot of things that need help.
What would you say to the youth of America about preventing another world war?
Say that again.
Like, what would you say to people who... How would you give your opinion about World War II?
Well, World War II, you know, was a... It was a war that had to be fought. I mean, we had this horror in Europe where Hitler is taking over, and not only the dictatorship of what he hoped would be the war, but the horrors that he caused there, and it had to be a war to stop that. I mean, we really, there was no, you know, are there just wars? I think that was a just war. I feel that World War II was war that was fought, maybe showed the best of what we could turn out and be united. And although I would end any statement around my experience by saying to any young people, make love, don't make war. It's a thing that if you've experienced, you don't want it to be, but you have to look back and say it was something we had to do. And I look back at it as that, as something that we did, and we had to eliminate those things that appeared in Europe and in Japan. What happened at Pearl Harbor could not be at all condoned and had to be answered to, and our survival. They had hopes of coming in here and taking over. So World War II was something that had to be to overcome those things that were there.
One final question. If you had to, I gotta rephrase this. What would you say to someone who says we should have? Let me change this. Would you ever condone another World War if it wasn't like World War II? Like if it was just something.
I mean, again, you know, we've got this situation right now in Iraq, that Afghanistan, and you look at that, and it's, if there was any way of getting, walking away, I would say let's walk away. But there is a thing happening now that in my generation didn't exist. There's this whole force, this whole effort that's being made to fight the America. America is looked at by a whole group of people that they want to destroy. And so what do you do about that? What do you do to a society or a group of people? If I could figure out a way of doing it without fighting, I would say, let's do it. I mean, there's a way to negotiate it, but these people aren't negotiating. And so I think it has to be. I think it's one of our big faults that we weren't able to prevent it early on, to try and think of all the things that could or couldn't be done. But the fact is, right now, we have people who want to destroy our way of life. And the thing is, do we retrench and stand here and try to keep them out? Or do we try and go where it's being festered and being trained and do it there? I feel horrible. You know, a lot of people look at the war and look at what's going on, and they give you the, let's support the troops, let's do this, let's do that. And I'm for that. It's a horror. But unless you've experienced seeing these things firsthand, there's a different value that you look at. And as far as I'm concerned, we can't walk away from it, but we should be doing and looking at every effort to avoid those things and get away from those things. But I feel for those men and women who are there protecting us right now. And I think we have to figure out a way to get out. And I think this president that we have has got an awful, awful job. And I think he's working hard. And I'm supporting him. And in my own mind, I think he has got good people. And he has to figure out a way to get our guys home and to prevent the damage that all of that could do to us here.
Thank you very much.
I'm pleased to do it. I hope you got enough material that you can write your report, and I hope I gave you the information that you were looking for.
Is there anything you want to say to Mr. Rozelle, who's going to be watching?
Well, he's one great guy. I've been seeing things that he's been doing beyond World War II. He's a treasure for the community, and he knows we really like him.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Good luck.
Thank you.
And I hope that you not only succeed in whatever your goals are, but help prevent the next one. And thank you for coming.
Okay.